Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 17.
Hello everyone, and I'm so excited to say welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 17. We have once again, thanks to you wonderful listeners, broken our record for submissions before a season. So my heartfelt thanks go out to each and every one of you who submitted an experience for this season. But remember, we don't have a cutoff on submissions. You can still send your submission through to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. We have now three shows where we can display your experiences to a wider audience. We have this main show, we have a mini-sode, and of course we have our Patreon show, Dark Bites. Of course, if anything is around 30 minutes plus in length, we'll consider it for the Dark Paranormal. Anything shorter will become a mini-sode or a story on Dark Bites. And as we mentioned, throughout October, we'll be doubling up our mini-sodes to 2 a week, just for the spooky season. Of course, most podcasts will put out something spooky during October. It's the done thing. But for us, this is our interest. Every week is Halloween to us, if you like. But as we are a paranormal podcast, I guess it's only right we pay that month its due respects and up our game, throwing out an extra show every week. So do keep those emails of your experiences coming in, because remember, as I've said over and over again, this is your show. And there's no way on earth we'd have reached season 17 without you wonderful listeners. And for any new listeners wondering, well, when does the experience begin? Generally, it's around 5 minutes into an episode. So I try and keep to that time scale. Because beforehand, we need to thank our wonderful Patreons who help keep this show running. So many people will like to skip direct to the experience, but sometimes I will give out other information at the beginning. It's entirely up to you as the listener how you consume the show. But for anyone listening now, the only reason you are is down to our wonderful Patreons. When you join our Patreon community, it genuinely is a community. There was a wonderful comment left by a Patreon recently that said it was like a 24/7 paracon, as in a paranormal convention, that you can just dip in and out of. It's a safe space for people to share their experiences without any fear of ridicule or somebody pretending that they're an expert in the field, because nobody can really be an expert in something we don't understand. And of course, when you join the Patreon, not only do you receive these episodes, both ad-free and before anyone else, but you can also gain access to our weekly Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites, which we put an example episode out on this feed last week. And you can also gain immediate access to the entire back catalogue of Dark Bites, which is well over 100 episodes to binge through at your leisure. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And of course, when you do sign up, I read your name out at this point. Because we've had a break in seasons, we've had a lot of sign-ups. So if you don't tell your name now, please don't fret. It will be read out at some point in this season. We have everyone's details there. But we'll begin right now with a huge thank you to the following newest members of our community. Kelly Quinn Cox, Kevin Freyhagen, Katarina Duman, Samantha Sales, Nancy Rhino, Joshua DeTillion, Crooked Little Ted, Andrew Flecker, Chris Liz, Chimpaholic, Abby Riley, Alicia from Oz, Jules Wilkie, Darcy Lip, Alyssa Heritic, Graylin Shea, Alicia Barr, Jenny Ho, Mia, Connor, Brooke Woolley, and Laisha Barrigan. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It truly means the world to me, and I hope you enjoy all the early ad-free releases and, of course, those Dark Bite episodes. But right now, and I've been waiting a good few weeks to say this, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door as we hear all about the real Southern Gothic. To say that this story has been difficult to write would be an understatement. If I'm being honest, sitting down to consolidate years upon years of paranormal activity began simply enough. However, I find myself having to stop writing for months at a time. In truth, this story has been sitting in my drive for over a year now. It's only with the understanding that those of you who listen to the show are or have been touched by the dark paranormal that I find myself once more able to sit down and hopefully, fully write my story out. At my core, I am a writer. I've always enjoyed writing stories, and because of that, I thought writing about my own experiences would be easy. But it hasn't been. Since my fingers have hit the keys, things that were once just memories have come flooding back. Even more so are the nightmares that have plagued me any time I try to write about anything that's happened. Frankly, there is a part of me that's afraid. Afraid that in telling this story, I'm somehow giving it more life or power. By putting it solidly into writing, I'm acknowledging the very things I've tried so hard to forget. Yet, here I am, and here we go. To begin, I'm from the American Southeast. It's a rural place covered with deep pine forests, swamps, crawling with a variety of dangerous creatures, and ghosts. Lots and lots of ghosts. Between the horrors of slavery and the many bloody conflicts that have occurred in the South, for many Southerners, it's an understanding that ghosts do exist. It's not even an if. In response, we have many different ways of keeping them from following us or going into our homes. Bottle trees, hanged blue ceilings on porches or doors, brooms with the bristles facing up near an entranceway. We respect the spirits, but just like a lock on your door to keep human intruders out, our spectral intruders are also considered. But despite all these precautions, some malevolent spirits are beyond wards or prevention. They are as old as the land itself. And it was on one of these such occasions my family and I found ourselves haunted for many, many years. It all began when we moved into our new home, which wasn't new at all. It had belonged to our great-grandmother, who passed some years before. Due to the relentless weathering and nature of the South, the house had quickly fell into disrepair, and it was in the process of being swallowed up by the plentiful wood surrounding it when my parents decided to fix it up. Until that point, we all lived in the same house as my grandparents. Imagine three generations under one roof. Needless to say, it was very cozy. as my two siblings and I shared one small bedroom. Understandably, we were very excited to move to our own place. Our parents spent months fixing and replacing all different components in the house, and the day we moved in was one of the happiest days ever. As a kid, there was a beautiful sense of mystery, this moving into a new home. Learning all of its quirks, the noises it would make, the best hiding places. My sister, Sarah, and older brother James, and I were all more than delighted to figure out its many treasures. Those first few weeks were like a brief, beautiful dream. And then it all began. Sarah and I shared a bedroom at the end of the house, right across from James. It was your typical frilly pink and white young girl's room, and I loved everything about it. Everything except the hallway outside the door. Unlike my sister, I was nervous, an easily frightened child, and the hallway terrified me from the moment we moved in. But I couldn't really explain why. The hallway just felt wrong. My parents chalked it up to being in a new home. But I refused to sleep in my room unless they kept the hallway or bathroom light on. Some background knowledge. My younger sister, Sarah, has always been my complete opposite. Ever since childhood, she's always been notoriously unafraid of anything. The same things that would fill me with terror would fill her with joy. If I'm being honest, growing up I was a bit jealous of how fearless she was, especially because I thought that was my job as the elder sibling. But no, she's always been the most daring of us all. Which, in hindsight, makes the following story even more disturbing. Being her extroverted self, Sarah would have trouble going to sleep the night before the first day of school. At this point, Sarah was about 7 years old. All light blonde hair, big hazel eyes, and enough energy to power a small city. In her excitement, she decided to sit up in bed and brush her hair whilst looking in the mirror. It is important to note that our room was a simple room, with a shared bunk bed and a small dresser which had a built-in mirror, that if one looked into at a particular angle, they could see the hallway along with their reflection. As Sarah brushed her hair, she suddenly noticed a little ballerina girl mid-spin in the hallway. Still looking in the mirror, Sarah remained where she was until the girl finished her dance and locked eyes with her. In her surprise, she twisted around quickly to look at the hallway and then back to the mirror, where she only found empty air. In childish curiosity, she went into the hallway to investigate and found no signs of movement or even a hint of anyone being there. Only then did the reality of her actions begin to set in. And in her fear, she ran back to bed and the imagined safety of its blankets. An adult may have tried to reason away the event or even deny what they'd seen, but Sarah knew she'd seen a ghost. In truth, I have only a vague memory of the next morning. However, I do remember being skeptical of what seemed like another scary thing that my sister wanted us to care about. It wasn't that she was a liar or anything of the sort. But new houses do take time to adjust to. And the last thing I wanted was to live in a haunted house. All in all, we thought she either dreamt it or the whole event was a figment of her overactive childlike imagination. The incident was quickly forgotten. Until I saw her too. My first encounter with her was very similar to my sister's. However, Unlike most paranormal stories, I saw her in the middle of the day. I remember being thirsty, walking into our small kitchen to grab a quick drink, and noticing a brief flash of movement in the corner of my eye. The kitchen was adjacent to my parents' room, and from my vantage point, I could easily see right into their bedroom, where there was a little girl spinning circles in my parents' room, her arms spread out wide and in total silence. At that moment, I was frozen in fear and shock. My mind went completely blank. That is until she locked eyes with me. At that, I immediately unfroze and went to my sister for both comfort and confirmation. When we compared notes, we realized we'd seen the same ghost. And while we didn't know it then, she would be the first of many incidences that happened in that house. In response to this event, my sister and I advocated for ourselves in the only way young children can do, through sheer indomitable stubbornness. We knew what we'd seen, and our parents could not tell us anything different. Furthermore, while our mum was sympathetic to our ghostly plight, our dad was, and still is, a man of science and logic. He assumed that we were letting our imaginations get the best of us. In hindsight, I just don't think he wanted us to be afraid of the new home, especially because they'd put so much time and effort into restoring the place. Ultimately, that was his way of dealing with the situation, by asserting there was no situation in the first place. But sibling solidarity is an amazing thing, and Sarah, James, and I knew from that moment something about our new house wasn't quite right. After those first two incidents, it seemed as if the house was determined to prove us wrong. For months, it was peaceful. It was quiet enough that we figured it was just a harmless ghost, that it must be a good ghost, young like us. Frequently, we would question Mum and any family members, asking if any kids had lived there before us, but to no avail. What we did find out was that the house was built in the 60s on long-held family land for our great-grandmother. And certainly no child had ever met an untimely death there. For all purposes, it was as if she'd come from the very dust of the house itself. However, after about a year or so, strange things began happening much more frequently. At night, as soon as everything settled and everyone in the house was asleep, often I'd lay awake, uneasy, unable to shake the feeling that something was watching me from the open doorway of my bedroom. Even with the hallway or bathroom light on, I could feel it. And I never felt safe enough to turn my back to whatever it was. Sometimes, feeling brave, I tried to turn my back to the door. But that stirring feeling would increase to the point I'd have to turn around, and I would be utterly convinced something was right there, just behind my turned head, waiting. So, needless to say, from an early age, I got very good at sleeping on one side only. Then, the footsteps began. Always heavy, always steady. James confirmed that he'd heard them as well. As a result, he began shutting his door at night, and that became his practice. He shut it out and didn't think about it. Unfortunately, it wasn't that easy for me. My deeply ingrained fear of the dark was greater than my fear of the steps. so my bedroom door would stay open. And those steps would continue throughout our time in that house. And then the nightmares began for both Sarah and me. These weren't your normal run-of-the-mill child nightmares. No, they were something else indeed. While the themes and scary aspects of these nightmares would vary between my sister and I, one thing didn't. During these horrific nightmares, when we would try to wake up, we couldn't. Instead, we would find ourselves often paralysed, stuck in a state between awake and something else. Please note, when I say something else, that's because at the time we had no true words to call it. We now know what we went through was sleep paralysis, but please keep this in mind, we were sheltered kids, no older than 8 or 9 at this point. And this was just before the age of unlimited internet access. So we had zero clue what was going on. All we knew was that we didn't like it, and that there was nothing we could do to stop it. During these events, at first, I would see my room around me and I would know I was still asleep. I also knew that there was something there with me, and it was aware that I knew it was there, and also that I couldn't move to escape it. Terrified, sometimes I was able to start with my fingers and move myself awake. But eventually, I began seeing strange beings during those moments of paralysis. One of the worst ones was a tall, dark shadow that always stood from the floor to the ceiling, unwavering in a corner of the room. It had no eyes, no features whatsoever, but its presence filled me with a deep sense of foreboding. I was very grateful that I didn't see it every time, but even when I couldn't see it, I could feel it, which was somehow worse, because the feeling that came was pure dread. Then there was the climber. I called it that because it would always be on the ceiling or the wall, and once it noticed my fear, it would slink its way over to me, meandering, reveling in my growing panic as I struggled against this paralysis. As I attempted desperately to wake up, I believe it sickeningly relished in my terror. Both of them did. And even though my sister could never open her eyes when it happened to her, the pure horror I felt was mirrored in her experiences too. For a moment, listeners, I want you to imagine being a child, laying in your childhood bed, unable to move, whilst faced with an unearthly being staring you down like you're an insect. I ask this of you all because it's easy to listen to a scary story and separate yourself from the reality of it. But we were only children when this happened to us. This was our reality, and there was no escape from it. It wasn't just terrifying, it was traumatic. And even to this day, I avoid looking at the ceiling or corners of dark rooms. As I aged, in response to all of the nightmares, I began to live very nocturnally. I'd stay up as late as possible, comforted by the glow of the TV and whatever I was reading that week. Only when I was so exhausted that the ever-prevalent feeling of being watched was overridden by the desperate need for sleep, would I eventually drift off. And even then, I preferred to sleep in the living room, far away from that hallway, curled up on the couch, with our dog right beside me. Every weekend, that was my respite, and for a while, this change of pace worked. until it didn't. Now let's have a quick break to talk to you about Policy Genius. It's September. It's back to school for many people. You start thinking of the year ahead. Will you get those work projects finished by the end of the year? And speaking of the end of the year, you have Thanksgiving, the holidays. They're all going to be upon us soon. Your brain is a whirlwind of plans, as it should be, because we're designed to survive by planning. But we don't plan that much when it comes to the end, i.e. when we're gone. It took me till last year to get life insurance for myself. And that's because life insurance felt a bit daunting. But Policy Genius makes this process a breeze. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. With Policy Genius's technology, you can compare quotes from America's top insurers in a few clicks and find your lowest price. And if you ever need help or guidance, they have an expert licensed support team to answer your questions, handle the paperwork, and advocate for you throughout the whole process. Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace for a reason. They don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, and their advice is unbiased. Everything else aside, the peace of mind you get from knowing your loved one's expenses are covered if anything happens to you is priceless. It's never too late to plan ahead, so head over to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see just how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Today's show is brought to you by Grundy's MD, MCT Wellness. And what MCTs, I hear you say? Well, an MCT is a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, it turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down excess fat in your body. And if people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Well, Dr. Grundy, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch, one that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out the excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate that caloric bypass at home. And it's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is specifically designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. All you do is add a scoop to water and enjoy it. And what's more, it tastes incredible. So you get to enjoy a delicious drink and then watch as you start to feel slimmer and more energized. So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to grundymd.com/darkparanormal and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular priced order, plus a 90-day money-back guarantee. So once more, that's grundymd.com/darkparanormal.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Late one night, I was sat on the couch with the dog, watching a show on the Disney Channel, when a sick, dizzy feeling came over me. I'll never forget the way my stomach dropped, as my entire body was encompassed by goosebumps. Even the hair on the back of my neck stood on end. And about a second later, I felt that same feeling of dread from my nightmares. But this time, I wasn't asleep. As if pulled by invisible strings, my head slowly turned to the doorway that led to the kitchen, which appeared to be vacant and dark. However, the minute my eyes landed on it, I knew it wasn't. And I felt a chill down to my very soul that paralysed me. Just like the nightmares that I tried to escape from. It was at that same moment that I heard a noise that shocked me so much it snapped my eyes away from the door. Growling. Oh, so friendly. He even enjoyed going to the vet. Family dog, who I never heard growl before, was growling low in his throat. Even more so, his eyes were fixed on that doorway, fur raised on the back of his neck, and for about 30 seconds, he steadily growled in his throat, staying by my side, eyes trained intently on the doorway. When he stopped growling, it was like all the air rushed back into the room again. My heart pounded, my hands shaking. I threw my arms around him and thanked him as I nuzzled my face in his fur. You see, that moment was a sort of twisted joy for me, because until then, despite everything, I felt very much that I was alone in all of this. Even more so, I felt like I was going crazy. But that moment gave me enough proof that maybe, just maybe, I was sensing something that simply couldn't be seen. That everything I was experiencing, from the nightmares to the steps, to the all-encompassing feeling of being watched that never went away, was really happening. Unfortunately, that began a series of escalating events that lasted for as long as we lived there. It's hard to describe how things truly were during that time. However, I will do my best to try and do it justice. The dread that I felt seemed to transform into a gloom that enveloped the entire house, some areas more than others. The hallway leading into the kitchen, well, that always felt off. As if someone was watching. Watching and feeling like you were the intruder in their home. The kitchen and the tiny storage closet in it, by extension, were also off limits. This permanent feeling of being watched was so prevalent in that area particular that I detested when my mum would tell me to do the dishes. Anytime it was my turn to do the dreaded chore, I always felt like someone or something was stood right behind me, about to choke me. It was so strong that sometimes I would do the dishes side on. Certainly not the most efficient way, but turning my back on that space was just not an option. On the one occasion I did turn my back to the room, I felt hands close enough around my neck that I thought James was playing a cruel prank, especially because he knew of my fear. That until I looked into the reflection of the window above the sink and dimly realised, with no small amount of horror, that there was no one in the room with me. After that, I adamantly refused to do the dishes. As a result, Sarah got saddled with the chore, and though she was equally creeped out by the room, she would often see dark shadows in the window. Someone had to do it. Another memorable event was the entire family entering the house on a Sunday afternoon after church, to the sound of a massive booming crash. My dad and my brother immediately rushed inside, not knowing what they were going to enter into, only to find that our large TV, one of those old-fashioned, heavy-backed ones, had fallen from its stand. Comparatively, this might seem easy enough to brush off, However, this TV took two grown men when we moved in. Even more so, the TV stand was not some delicate prefab construction. It was a heavy-duty and metal stand that provided the large TV with a solid base and enough room, so that if anyone, by some miracle, was able to push it, it still wouldn't fall. And here's the kicker. It fell forward, and the only thing behind it was a solid wall. So, it left us all, even Dad, utterly perplexed. Because how could this behemoth of a TV simply slide forward off its steady perch? As if something or someone had pushed it through the wall onto the floor. Not one of us had a single explanation. 4 years it was like this. Event after event after event. There were really too many to count. The steps continued. The eerie feeling of being watched was heavy and perpetual. And the nightmares became more vivid. The innocence that marked our first ghost sightings was a thing of the past. At this point, the grim reality of living in a haunted house had settled over all of us. And I do mean all of us. Even my dad became cold and short-tempered. My mother became abrasive and turned to various substances to cope. My sister, my best friend, became distant, and we would fight nearly daily. My brother, my protector, shut me out and became a totally different person. I became withdrawn, convinced that being alone was the best way to be. They say hauntings change people, especially malicious ones. And I believe it. Because we all changed. Every single one of us, and none of us for the better. As I progressed into my teens, I decided I wanted to know more about the mystery of the house. What was really going on with it? Truly, I just wanted to understand. And in my curiosity, I talked my mum into buying a Ouija board from a thrift store. At the time, I was under the delusion that we could talk to whatever was messing with us. Maybe figure something out. In hindsight, it was absolutely foolish. A stupid kind of arrogance that only a teenager has. But I was tired and thought to myself, it can't get possibly any worse. Famous last words, right? Because, obviously, it did get worse. So, so much worse. The Ouija board being brought into our home wasn't the catalyst of the hauntings, the way it is with many other stories. However, it was like pouring gasoline on an open flame. We only played, and I use that term loosely, a few times. And ironically, we didn't get much of a reaction from it. One would think in a house like this, it would go haywire. But that wasn't what happened. The only thing it ever spelt out was the word rain, as in R-E-I-G-N. And at the time, I didn't understand. But looking back, I think I now do. Let me explain. The definition of the word rain is as follows. To accede to the throne. To assume royal power publicly. And, generally speaking, to become powerful. And that is exactly what happened. It became way more powerful. My nightmares became unbearable. It liked to choose family members, some alive, some dead, and then have them be my aggressor in my dreams. Imagine having your grandpa, who you love and adore, give you the middle finger, then laugh maniacally whilst he stares at you with soulless, glassy eyes. Or having your sister talk to you with a voice that is layered and baritone, in a language you've never heard of. The dreams were awful. But having my loved ones turned into instruments for this thing to torture me, well, that was a whole new level. Surprisingly, it wasn't one of my nightmares that made everything come to a head. It was one of my mother's. And apparently one was enough for her. And it was horrific enough that she burst into my room in the middle of the night to throw the Ouija board straight outside, right into the garbage bin. When I asked her about it, she was candid and told me everything, vividly. I still remember sitting on the porch with my mother, a freshly lit cigarette in her hand, shaking, her blue eyes distant as she recounted her nightmare to me. In hers, she saw her mother, my grandmother, with her eyes, ears, mouth and nose pouring lava. Upon realizing my mother was there too, she slowly turned her dripping, melting face and said in a screeching voice, "Go get your daughter!" My mum tried to wake up from that dream four times, and each time she tried, she returned to her own mother, screaming repeatedly, "Go get your daughter! Go get your daughter!" Her voice growing progressively louder and more distorted every time she failed to wake up. Needless to say, I didn't argue with my mum about the board being thrown away, as I understood this was not something she would or should budge on. But we should have followed the procedures of actually getting rid of the board's influence, because we might have thrown the physical board out, but the damage was already done. And after that, it, whatever it was, almost seemed to grow bored with me. And it targeted James, my brother. James went from being a straight A student and a star athlete to a complete different person. He wrecked his car, failed his classes, struggled with drug and alcohol abuse. He was out all night and frequently got in trouble with the police. In a span of 6 months, his behaviour became so erratic and strange, and even more so when I would look into his eyes. There was an otherness to him, one that terrified me. His once cool, bluish green eyes seemed overly bright, and things he said and did were often nonsensical, bordering on manic. On one such occasion, I heard the front door open in the middle of the night. Noticing my brother wasn't in his room, I went out of the front door into the moonlit darkness to try and find him. And I found him staring silently down the dirt road that led deeper into the darkened woods behind the house. Hesitantly, I joined him, staring down that road as well. I asked him exactly what he was looking at. Never taking his eyes from the road, he said in a low but steady voice, "Do you see them too? Can you feel them? There, in the dark." When those words left his mouth, I felt distinctly in danger. Like my life depended on my answer to his question. So, while slowly taking one step back closer to the house, I rather unskillfully dodged his question by demanding he come back inside. Thankfully, he did. However, if I knew then what I know now, I would have told him the truth. I would have said, "Yes, I can feel them too." The thing that most paranormal media gets wrong about true hauntings is the mental toll that living like that does to a person. Always feeling watched, not ever feeling safe in your own home. Well, it can drive even the most positive person into the depths of despair. And unfortunately, when those negative feelings become internalized, they can turn into real life consequences. I don't say this lightly, because they very much did. And I understand that this story might reach a widespread audience. Please know that my heart goes out to anyone who suffered due to depression or any other mental illness. I sincerely do not want to trigger anyone. So please be mindful that my upcoming portion of my tale will contain self-harm, suicide attempts, and death. Whilst in our late teens, my brother attempted suicide in that house. I will never forget seeing him crying and bleeding. Even worse was that he kept repeating, "Make the voices stop! Make the voices stop!" as he steadily cried and cried. He was institutionalized shortly after. 5 times. And once he finally got out, he was never the same again. Again, to any listeners, I apologize if my recollection of this memory seems clinical or dry. I don't like to remember this awful time, but it's very relevant to the rest of the story. As a culmination of every awful thing that's happened in that house, shortly after I was 16, my mother left and my brother went with her. The way they left was as jarring as it was numbing. We came home late from a basketball game to find both of them gone and letters on our pillows. In my present life, a part of me can understand their unhappiness and why they left. My parents had reached a dead end in their marriage. They never spoke to each other. And let me tell you, the only thing worse than your parents fighting is when they stop. That's when you know it's over between them. When silence reigns instead of incessant bickering. And my brother's mental health issues only exacerbated the already fragile ecosystem of the family. In hindsight, it shouldn't have been a surprise. However, for a while, the looming, ever-present misery that blanketed the house seemed dull in comparison to the pain and betrayal I felt at being left behind. It wasn't necessarily that I even wanted to go with them, but why did they get to escape? Why did they get a reprieve from this misery? Even worse, my dad decided to immediately start dating and seeking happiness elsewhere. So Sarah and I were often left at that house completely and utterly alone. And still reeling from the loss of our family as we knew it, we were more at its mercy than ever before. In many ways, our home began to feel less like a home and more like a tomb. Things were bad before, but now it was like it had finally drawn blood and craved more. With our mother and brother gone, my sister moved into my brother's old room, and in his former room, for the first time in 10 years, she had an unsettling lucid dream that led to an out-of-body experience. In her exact words, it was terrible. As always, in her dream, she realized she was dreaming, and upon that realization, she looked up to see men in suits surrounding a barrel that was emanating fire. It was on the outskirts of what appeared to be a city. Once the men realized she was there and aware of them, they began chasing her. And in a desperate attempt to get away, she ran right out of her body, trying to turn the light in her physical room on despite not being part of the physical world. And then, like a rubber band, she snapped back to her body, woke up, and was finally able to turn the lights on. Surprisingly, it even came for my dad. Sarah and I went travelling with our aunt one spring break, leaving him alone in the house for about 5 days. Of course, my dad didn't believe in the paranormal. And if you ask him about it, even today, the best you will get is he will slowly shake his head, giving the affirmative, barely acknowledging what took place. But one night as he lay asleep in the bed, right next to his ear, a voice spoke the words,
"Wake up!"
loud enough that he bolted upright. Then, thinking there was maybe an intruder in the house, he checked all the rooms and found them disturbingly empty. One night, after listening to the same clunking steps that had haunted me and my sister my entire life, I found myself utterly terrified, crawling into bed with my sister, whose only response was, "I hear them. Do you hear them?" I can't remember what I said back to her, but I do know through desperation and tears, I called my dad, who was staying with his then girlfriend, current wife. I thought he would come home, but he was only annoyed I would call so late, telling me it was all in my imagination. The hurt that blossomed from that one moment echoed throughout my entire relationship with my dad for many years afterwards, especially given what happened to him. I didn't understand how he could deny it. And as I lay there curled next to my sister, listening to those damn steps, tears running down my face, I felt the house take away yet another part of me. The last thing that happened in that house was as threatening as it was simple. My sister and I had just got off the bus, and being hungry teenagers, we decided to make some biscuits in the oven. As my sister put on a show for us to watch, I attended to the biscuits. To my left was the sink and to my right the oven. There, I watched a knife fly out of the sink and with a clink land on the floor about 8 feet away. Hearing the noise, my sister stepped into the kitchen and looked down at the knife and then up at me. To this day, I don't remember. Maybe it was the shock of what I witnessed, but according to my sister, I mumbled, It flew out of the sink. I guess there really wasn't anything else to say. Eventually, my dad remarried and we moved into his wife, now my stepmother's, home. It's difficult to describe that time of my life because it was like waking up from a nightmare. My dad returned to the happy, warm person that I remembered from my childhood. Sarah and I became close again. I joined track and cheer. My grades got even better. It was as if we'd all been under some sort of spell that we'd finally been able to break. Which was fine with me. All I wanted to do was forget and move on, to be a normal teenager. So I tried. But trauma really does keep score. And there are some things we can't run away from or push down far enough. That house took my childhood and tore apart my family. Yet it still wasn't done. The next part of the story is rather heavy, but it cannot go unsaid. Still determined to understand what happened in that house, I dug for years. And over many talks with various family members, I finally managed to piece together a story 100 years in the making. On the land where the house sits, about 80 acres, give or take, there have been at least 7 suicides that we know of, all within a mile of each other, all first-born males, and all in various ways. I won't give the names as they're not mine to give. However, one was a great uncle, a second cousin, another cousin, his dad, the list goes on. And this brings me back to my brother. If he had been successful in his attempt, he would have been number 6 at that time. The latest 2 suicides have occurred in the past 5 years. Unfortunately, my brother's entanglement with that awful place did not end when he left. For the years that followed, my sibling relationship with my brother was a shell of its former self. He fell into addiction and the various problems that come with it. Please know that I loved my brother with all my heart, but seeing him be so different from the person I knew him as was difficult in a way that's hard to explain. Unless you've loved someone with an addiction, I don't think you can really grasp it. It's complicated in the most literal and thorough use of the word. And to my deepest regret, our communication was sketchy and not consistent in the slightest. One August in 2022, I received a call that changed my life. My brother had been hit by a car, and after days of fighting, he eventually succumbed to his injuries. The sheer pain of his loss is something I'm still grappling with, and not something I mention without purpose. You see, a week before my brother's death, he went back in that house to grab a few cherished childhood items that we placed in the attic when he left. An untimely coincidence? Maybe. But the area I live in is known for its Venus flytraps. These carnivorous plants that silently wait, patiently, for prey to come to them. And only when that juicy insect is in its grasp does it close its maw and slowly digest it. I theorise that the house, or more likely the land it stands on, was like that, and we were the perfect prey. Curious and unsuspecting as much as it was patient, I think it waited for him or one of us to come back, and then it struck one last blow of pain to us all. One last victory to sink its claws in and demand our attention. I didn't even know he went into the house until about a year after his death. And when I found out, the first words that popped into my mind were, "That house got him." As far as my research went, I couldn't find any reason for the land to be as dark and as twisted as it clearly still is. Despite many of us never encountering it, I believe there are places of true evil in this world. Places that fester and grow darkness without any rhyme or reason. Since I began writing this, I've started having the nightmares again. One is of me waiting in front of the house as it stands there, as if to welcome me home. The latest one features me being stared down by 2 demented clown-looking creatures with stretched limbs, gaunt faces and sharp teeth. And both have their eyes trained on me, as if begging me to run. but I don't. Instead, I sing a hymn to wake myself up as I stare them down as well. As with many other accounts I've listened to on this wonderful podcast, I've found writing this entire ordeal to be very cathartic, because while the dark paranormal most certainly exists, it counts on our fear, and it depends on our quiet to survive. And, quite frankly, I've been silent for far too long. In the beginning, I mentioned that this story has taken forever to write, and I do have other stories. Sometimes I think being touched by the paranormal is like the story of Midas. You're forever cursed with it. But it is what it is. After all, who really knows how any of this works? What I do know is that the more I encounter, the more questions I seem to have. Before I end this, please allow me to say that I don't think you realise how much good you've done with this podcast. As I mentioned above, the dark paranormal thrives in silence and isolation. And you have, perhaps ironically, created a community where we can all share and process our experiences in a healthy and supportive way. And for that, I'm truly grateful. Thank you. No, thank you for one of the most interesting and well-described descriptions of an experience with the paranormal I think I've ever heard. Also, I'd like to offer my condolences on the passing of your brother. I've seen addiction firsthand, and it doesn't always need to be surrounded by anything paranormal, as we all know. But it certainly is one of the most chilling things you'll ever see. To witness that metamorphosis of someone you love turn into a slave to something they can no longer control. In this experience, does it seem to be attached to that house? Well, the answer would be for me, and my personal beliefs, a resounding yes. And I think you quite accurately hit the nail on the head with the description of the Venus flytrap, and this property waiting patiently for the next time to bite, so to speak. The writer of this experience wished to remain anonymous, and the names used have been fictionalized. However, Sarah, who is the sister, not real name of course, of the person who submitted this experience, has sent in a much shorter version of her version of events of that house, and we'll be reading that out in Dark Bites for our Patreons this week. As a final sidebar to our debut episode for season 17, this episode did not want to be recorded. And it was a bit freaky at points, as in things turning themselves off, as in the computer wiping 40 minutes worth of work. And when I say 40 minutes worth of work, I mean about 4 hours worth of work, 40 minutes of recordings. Now, interestingly, and this, I'm sure, is all just coincidence, I'm just saying it's a very interesting one, I put a promo out last night for this upcoming season on social media, and on some of the versions, I used Tubular Bells, which is Mike Oldfield's tune from The Exorcist. Now, as amazing as we all know that film is, one thing that stands out to me is a documentary about the making of The Exorcist, and within it, there is a discussion with an actor who had a discussion with a Jesuit priest because they filmed on location. And this Jesuit priest gave this actor a medallion or a medal. And I can't recall which saint it was, but he basically asked the question, "Have you heard of intervention?" And the actor said no. And the priest went on to say, "Intervention is whenever the devil realizes you're trying to expose him as the trickster that he is. He will do anything in his power to try and stop you." Now, yes, I am implying that this could all be related. It is a coincidence. I'm not trying to say that's definitely what took place. But as our Patreons know, because they've received this early, it went out late to them because of a complete computer malfunction that has never happened before in the history of the show. And that's apart from taking several breaks throughout the recording because of bangs downstairs. And I'm recording this now in the afternoon. It was earlier in the morning, as in maybe 11 a.m, when I thought genuinely something had fell from a table, a large bang. And in this house of four bedrooms, there's only me and my new pet hamster, Lilu. So from constant interruption throughout, to it eventually wiping away 3 to 4 hours worth of work, our poor Patreons got this 4 hours later than they normally would. So, is it something there? I don't know. Maybe I just need to buy better equipment. I will say I am very glad I'm not recording this at night, because this sort of feeling I'm having whilst recording this particular episode has happened maybe only 3 other times. And don't forget, we're in season 17, so we're talking about 170 episodes. But I, for one, would like to wrap this one up as soon as possible. So I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you all so much for joining me on this debut episode of Season 17. And don't forget, if you'd like early ad-free access to all of this feed, including minisodes, debuts and finales, and of course next week's Dark Bites will feature Sarah's version of events from this same house, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. For our Patreons, again, I will speak to you on Sunday for that episode, and for everyone else, I'll see you Wednesday for a minisode. Until then, do stay safe, do take care, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Make the right call for the right Medicare Advantage benefits. Go to MedMutual.com/review to schedule your free Medicare plan review with Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.